You are listening tuned to KBBI, and you are listening to The Coffee Table. I'm your host, Aaron Bolton, and today we are talking all things hiking in Kachemak Bay State Park and National Trails Day, which is on June 3rd. And today I'm joined by retired State Park Ranger Roger McCampbell, friends of Kachemak Bay State Park board member, regular park volunteer Kathy Sarnes, and Ground Truth Trekking Executive Director Brentwood Higman, who we will refer to as Hig for this show. If you have any questions about volunteering, how you can get involved, or maybe you just want to share some of your experiences volunteering or on the trail, join the conversation by calling us at 235-7721. And you can also email info@kbbi.org. And I just want to start with National Trails Day and what it is. And Roger, you actually helped get the first Trails Day off the ground in the park. Can you just give us a short history of the event in Kachemak Bay State Park and kind of like what it is?
It's June 1st.
Oh, it's June 1st.
June 1st. Sorry. The first Saturday of the month is National Trails Day. We started it, I believe, as memory serves, around 1996. It could have been 97. I just don't remember exactly which year we started it with, at that time, Park Ranger Wayne Beasel and a few other volunteers, and Mako Hagerty with the water taxis. We kind of got it off the ground back then.
Okay. And what was was there some already a national push at that time, or what was kind of the impetus for getting it implemented here?
Well, National Trails Day started back in the early 70s nationwide. We just never had time for it or the energy or whatever, but as we got a little more sophisticated and looking around, we wanted a way to get people into the park. We needed a little extra help here and there. At that time, we had a little better funding, and we had more volunteer trail crews and seasonal help, and more ranger staff around. There's very little there, so we had a little bit the luxury of having a little more time for planning. But the real thing was to get people over the park, to get kids and families. That's why we had the family hike. And at that time, it was $5, looked at as a donation that we'd give that for the gas to the water taxis. And then it became a tradition that they just gave the money back to the Friends once we got the Friends established as a nonprofit to help fund that, to keep things going. So,
and what was that first year like? How many volunteers did you get out there to work on the trails?
Oh, I don't have any idea. we had a pretty good turnout, though. I do remember probably about 20, 25. I know on high years we've had as 60 to 80, depending on, where we had, the Howl kids and other groups. We've had airplane flights and overnight trips and things like that. And there were other hiking clubs that would come down and things. So, yeah, I think it's been highly successful, a lot of fun, and the idea is just to, the main thing is to get people out into their park, and if we can get a little bit of work out of them, whether it's picking up litter on the beach, or going on a nature hike. This year, Taz Talley's going to lead the family hike as a naturalist up to the Gruen Glacier and over. Or there's people like my good friend and volunteer of the year, the Golden Pulaski Award winner, Kathy here, who works incredibly hard and really makes it, and she's got an all hard-working female crew going this year. So,
right, and Kathy, as he mentioned, you do a lot of volunteer trail work on a regular basis. Can you just tell us a little bit about what got you into volunteering, how you got started with volunteering around trail work in the park?
Hi. I guess I got roped into it on a Trails Day about 4 years ago, and I thought that would be fun, and paid my $20 donation and went over, and Eric was in charge of that day, and we were working on the saddle trail, and I don't know, it was just, it dawned on me how rewarding it is to be over there and it's good hard work, and which I like. It's good training for Nordic skiing and running, and but you also leave a mark there. You make the trail a little better for the next hiker. So I talked to Eric. I was watching him use the gas brusher, and I thought, I think I could handle that. It looks like a weed eater, kind of, but it's bigger. And he said, sure. And he approved me on the brusher, taught me how to use it and all the safety. And then I was able to start leading my own small crews, because I only need two people behind me to be what they call swampers, raking and throwing. And so I've been pretty much involved since, about four and a half years ago.
And we were chatting on the phone yesterday a little bit about this, and you said you were kind of watching some of your, the other impetus was that you were kind of watching some of your favorite trails disappear, kind of get overgrown, and they, the park staff just didn't really have the ability to get in there and clean those trails up.
Yeah, and that was another motivation. I love the trails over there. We moved back here in 2008, and I was been using them on a regular basis, and I've watched several of my favorite trails completely disappear because there's no funding, there's very low staff, and it all relies on volunteers for clearing. And it took a little while for me to understand that. I'd ask, well, who's going to clear this trail? And they'd look at me and say, you are. So I'd say, okay, let me find some friends.
So if you come up with the idea, you're volunteering yourself, essentially.
Yes.
All right. What are some of the trails you mentioned that you kind of had a pet project last year? Was it the Sadie Knob Trail?
Yeah, we ended up, the Sadie Knob ended up being a pet project. And it wasn't even on the agenda for anybody, but this is part of the encouraging partnerships with other people. The Otter Cove, who has a place over there, said they would provide free housing and free rides to anybody who would work on those trails. So I said, okay, and found a few crews, got them together, and we have pretty much cleared Sadie Knob from the south end up to the top. And then for trail this year, we're going to finish the north end. But anyway, it became a pet project because a private interest was willing to help support us.
Yeah, in Rondra, are partnerships like that pretty common? You were park ranger up until a few years back, and or some of those partnerships kind of hard to come by these days to get some of those pet projects out there.
They're hard to come by, but there are people out there. It's a matter of time and willingness to make those contacts or have those contacts contact us or the rangers to get it going. It'd be great to have more of that, and we always wanted to, we had a kind of an adopt a trail going for a while, but over the years there's been other volunteer service organizations. A lot of the trail work in the early the late 80s early 90s is Operation Raleigh. And for a time, two or three years, we used prison inmate labor crews. And when you had a dedicated, a park ranger that was assigned specifically to Ketchmack Bay, and a ACC, when we had ACC, Alaska Conservation Corps funding specific for a park, then you had crew leaders and you could recruit more volunteers, and we had a lot of kids, college kids, that would come up from the lower 48 and spend their summer as a volunteer intern, and we get a lot of work out of them. And in fact, a lot of them never left Homer or came back because they fell in love with this, and some of them went off to become park rangers or natural resource managers or something else. So it was a good program, but right now, there's no funding for the state to hire the crew leaders under that program to do general trail maintenance. That's one of the issues that we have.
Yeah, in terms of what gets done now, like what is the capacity of crews or paid staff out there doing trail work?
Well, I know Eric and his crews are pretty well full-time on projects of trying to upgrade specific sections of trail. And, they've been working on the reroute and the upgrade of the saddle trail for 4 years now. They're pretty well almost done, I think, but I'm not sure. So it takes a long time to do things right. You know, a lot of the trails that were built in the park, you know, when the first park ranger was assigned there in 1984, that was Jeff Johnson. And, you know, the goal then was to, there was about 6, maybe 10 miles of rough trails, the saddle being the Glacier Trail and up to Chinaput Lake, or Leisure Lake. And they're still pretty rough shape. And so we spent several years upgrading those. And I still remember the best thing I ever heard was a we got some criticism, you know, from people that said, well, they didn't like us improving the trails. They liked them the way they were. But I think one of the best compliments that, especially that Jeff ever got, was a gentleman that had always hiked up to Leisure Lake to go fishing or camping, but he came back after we'd rebuilt, rerouted, and improved the grades and said, this is wonderful. I'm going to go get my wife and kids because now they can actually hike this trail. And that's what it's all about. Not every trail needs to be for everybody, but certain trails should be for families and kids to enjoy their park and their outdoors.
Right. And you mentioned that there used to be just a few trails, just, I mean, at night, you know, back in the mid 80s.
Right.
And what has been kind of the evolution of creating trails, if you want to kind of talk about?
That's a good story, I think, is that we had this little thing called the Exxon Valdez oil spill in 1989, and we were pretty well wrapped up with that response to that for the next year or two. But as a result of that, the funding, the penalty funding, the settlement of that not only helped buy back the center of the park, the Chinaput, from the Native Association, the timber rights, but the Marine Rec Project, that money went into what was called the Marine Rec Project, and that started circa 1995, and actually Jeff went up to be one of the managers on that, and that was basically a grant program. And so we applied for grants. It was seen as mitigating for the damage done by the oil spill. And we were able to secure several grants to scout and start building trails, public use cabins, the dock. We redid Halibut Campground, Slide Hole Campground, a lot of projects. And I'm just talking our little area down here. And actually, we hired Eric Clark. That's when we first hired Eric down here. And he scouted out lots of new trails. We just sat down on maps and said, how about a trail from here to here? And, you know, and part of it was the management planning. And then he and Morgan McBride scouted out about 75, 80 miles worth of trail in one summer. And the next year we hired crews and set them loose. And they started building trails. But pretty low standards. It was kind of like, well, we'll build these trails and then we'll upgrade them over the years because we have all this funding, and that went away. So
and where, in terms of funding now, how is the park able to get funding now for some trail work?
Most of the funding comes from the Recreational Trails Grant Program, which is administered by state park staff out of the Anchorage office, and it is a grant program with federal funding from basically your fuel, your road taxes, and that money, though, is project specific. In other words, unless things have changed, Eric or Jason apply for a grant, and it is for this trail to upgrade or build this trail, and ergo, that is what they can do. They can't then go and work on another project, or I say, hey, you know, you need a crew up at Anchor River to do some brushing. They can't do that by the parameters of the grant.
Yeah.
The funding for general operations for the park is basically Eric's and Jason's salary. There is no extra money for other salaries to hire seasonal staff, other than the volunteer coordinator, Christina, who's done a fabulous job that recruiting and getting volunteer projects going in lieu of paid staff.
So. And so there's really little capacity to be creating new trails at this point.
Very little, unless it's under a specific grant.
Oh, and Kathy, you got something to Oh, sorry, I thought you had something to add there. But, you know, but there are some new trails being built in Higg, if you want to jump in here. You created your group, Grand Truth Trekking, crafted the Tucker Backdoor Trail. If you want to kind of talk a little bit about kind of how that came to be and kind of what the trail is.
Sure. Yeah, the park has been going through its process. It's done or nearly done with its process of generating this comprehensive plan for the park, looking into the future. And I, you know, prior to 2015, although I'd been a frequent hiker in the park, I wasn't even really much of a user of the trails. I would usually be bushwhacking off in different places, but friend Jeff Lee convinced me to come and sit in on one of these meetings related to making that plan. And it was a meeting where it was sort of brainstorming about future trails in the park, kind of similar to what Roger was describing, drawing lines on a map. It was, you know, a lot of fun, and it was a chance to kind of look at the park and think about, well, where have I been that, you know, might be a good trail someday. And one route that my wife and I had been exploring and kind of developing as a bushwhacking route, going from Tutka over to the other side of the peninsula, really stood out. And in that meeting, you know, people were kind of excited about it. And I had this, you know, I didn't have any experience with trail building and had this really naive idea that, you know, well, there's a good bushwhacking route there. So, I mean, this really should be pretty trivial. You know, we have to trim a few branches and then you've got a trail. Which is totally wrong, but it was sort of the idea that lured me into that, and then even more important than that, it was just there were a lot of people who got excited about it right away, like Lindsay Walter was chair of the Park Advisory Board at that time, and she was in that meeting, and she was one of the volunteers that was out there on day two as we started cutting the trail. And she'll be up again this year in July. We sketched out an idea going from the head of Tutka Bay over to Taylor Bay. And then over the last few years, we've put about 700 volunteer days, something like that, into this project. Had around 70 different volunteers. It's been a huge, huge effort. All of us have learned a lot, myself included. Now I have a bit more nuance in my understanding of what it means to build a trail, and build a trail that's sustainable, meaning in this case that it's a trail that you hopefully the maintenance isn't going to become such a burden that it does, you know, just vanish back into the forest, that it's something that you can practically maintain, and that it doesn't create, you know, cause damage to the wilderness around it. And so this year, we're continuing that effort. We'll actually be out on Trails Day, but actually kind of in the middle of a week-long effort, working from the head of Tutka. And one of the things we're working on doing is linking that trail into some of the existing trails by Tutka, so by Tutka Lagoon, so the Tutka Lakes Trail, the trails that come from Sea Star Cabin, the Tutka Lagoon Trail that comes from Jackloff. And so if all goes well with that, then this summer it would actually be possible to start walking at Jackloff Dock and get all the way to Taylor Bay on the south side of the peninsula. Not all of that is like a fantastic polished trail. There are portions that aren't even marked up in the high pass. There's a four-mile section that's not marked yet. And you have river crossings and high rocky sections, but the portions of the trail near the head of Tutka are quite accessible. You know, they're not saddle trail level, but they're a very reasonably hikeable trail for most people, and a lot of new alpine country to explore there. It's been a fantastic project. Overall,
I know there's been a lot of interest online, and you mentioned kind of discovering kind of what goes into, you know, designing a trail and crafting a trail, like just because it's a good bushwhacking route doesn't necessarily mean it might be the best trail. And there's some other aspects there. Can you talk a little bit about that experience of kind of discovering, like, kind of what goes into designing a trail? Because, you know, for myself, I went out on a trails day, I think, a couple of years ago, and I think I was really surprised at kind of like how much actually goes into, you know, just a simple reroute or even just maintaining a trail. So if you just want to talk about a little bit about your experience with designing and then the building process.
Sure, yeah. The thing that surprised me when we first started working on the trail, working with Eric Clark, is his immediate focus was almost entirely on the grade of the trail, so the slope that it's climbing at. And in the permit that we have from the park to build the trail, and if you look in any trail standards documents, that slope is kind of, you know, the number one concern that is focused on there. And so the slope we're aiming for is 16% or almost 10 degrees, which is actually fairly steep for trails. This is for a relatively narrow primitive trail. But actually, as a bushwhacker, it feels really like you're going over a mountain. It's not, you know, it's not a 10 degree slope. You have to wind your way along, and you might have to put in a switchback or find some tricky way to curve around something in order to try to maintain that trail. So that was a big surprise to me. And then the other thing that I came into, the only thing where it's not really experience, but maybe some knowledge that I came in with, is having been on. In the terrain around here on a lot of trails, including animal trails and such, and seeing the way that those trails form and which ones, where does the trail vanish in time, you know, if it's not heavily maintained. And so, and actually some of that knowledge was based on issues that had come up with the park trails, since they were built in the 90s there. So based on that, we have some specific ideas about, for instance, really avoiding salmon berries, and about one of the ones we talk a lot about, and it's been a really interesting discussion with Eric Clark, and trying to, you know, kind of bring in his more sophisticated knowledge, but you know, and kind of merge that with what we've seen around here is in switchbacks. Sure, you've got, you know, hikers, and sometimes people worry about the hikers, you know, cutting a corner on a switchback. But what is commonly not covered in trail standards is what the bears do. And here, we have so many black bears. Bears are a huge trail user, and what you'll find is if you make a switchback in a brushy area, often the bears, they don't seem to believe in making that sharp corner. They'll just kind of wander off into the bushes. And you give it a year or two, and that route they wander off into the bushes becomes more clear than the actual trail that you've built. And so a hiker is faced with, they're just walking along. They don't realize that they're passing the switchback and heading off into the bushes until a few minutes later they're looking around and there's no trail at all. And so we actually think a lot about the bears when we're designing a trail, and we've been really particular on how we make some of those corners and such. So, I mean, we're still experimenting and learning, but it's been a very, very interesting process. It's gone from something where I've, you know, initially I was like, trails, you know, that's how you get to the hike. There's kind of like a logistical necessity, and now I'm really passionate about trails and really excited to look at the details and see how things are working or not working.
Sure, and I just want to remind our listeners, if you were just joining us, we are talking about all things hiking in Kachemak Bay State Park and National Trails Day, which is on June 1st, not the 3rd, like I had mentioned earlier in the show. And if you have any questions about volunteering, how you can get involved, or maybe you just want to share some of your experiences volunteering or on the trail, join the conversation by calling us at 235-7721 or emailing info@kbbi.org. And Roger, I mean, you kind of come at this from a different experience in terms of, but you want to describe, like, when a new trail is being created, like, what, there's a long process involved in getting that trail built, from just the conception of it to, you know, actual first day people can get out there and hike on the trail.
Well, there certainly is now. I mean, as I mentioned, when we started on trails, I did Trails Day back in 1973 with no knowledge, just leading Boy Scouts and things like that. But, you know, we were all fairly naive. We've just, as anything, as you learn more and you get more sophisticated, so more goes into it now because we realize what mistakes we made back then. And the same thing Hig is saying is, so, you know, when you, yeah, you go into a trail, you have to, you know, number one thing is the slope. What's the, what do you want from this trail? What are you trying to accomplish? Is it just to access a particular scenery or, and all kinds of considerations, you know, bear denning sites, kidding area, goat kidding, eagle nests, lots of things to be aware of, your slope, your drainages, your soils, you know, what bridging are you going to need, rock work. It's an engineering. So it's very, it's analogous to building a new highway. And you have to look at your drainage issues. There's going to be runoff, salmon streams, you know, what harm will you do and how to fix that? Because a trail is a scar on the land. It's going to be in a, but a good trail will be a sustainable trail. So did that answer your question?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, when I was, you know, out there for Trails Day a couple of years ago, I mean, just getting the general guidance of when you're kind of cutting into the, like, the side of the hill. I think we were creating like a bench trail, which is kind of in the side of the hill, and the trail's going to be flat. And just the degree the slope needs to be at so water can run off, and and kind of how you're cutting into the side of the hill. It's all, I mean, you know, you're not getting out a you know, like a tape measure by any means, but you, but it's still pretty specific in terms of how that trail is designed. To make sure that it doesn't, you know, get washed out in a rain event or, or, you know, just get overgrown too easily or the soils aren't just going to kind of crumble away.
Yeah, a lot of people just think, well, you know, what's the big deal? We're going to cut into this slope and do this, but there's no streams. Well, there's this phenomena that people, it's called sheet flow, is one of the terms for it. And that's water is moving all the time downhill. There is water in that top layer of soil and it's moving, and you cut into that, it's going to start seeping out and pooling, and it's got to go someplace. So you've got to design your engineering, your drainage around, you're interrupting that and then trying to get that back so it continues on its journey, so to speak. So
great. And, oh, sorry,
I was just going to say that, like, that was, you know, a couple of the concepts that you know, that learning from Eric and other, you know, experience and stuff that really came through as clear is, one, there's the water, and that is kind of a unifying concept that whenever you're looking at the tread, you know, you're thinking about what happens if, you know, in that flood that maybe, that just drenching downpour that maybe only happens once every few years, what happens to that water? And that's been, you know, that defines a lot of what happens with the trail. And then the other one that really was a surprise to me is, like, thinking about sort of the psychology of hikers. And that's something that keeps coming through, like talking about those that you know, cut tread bench trail type situation. One of the issues is that people will often walk on the outside of the tread, and so they'll start calving it off, and they'll start making the sort of rounding the trail and making it hard to walk on. One of the things that we had a trainer that came in and helped us with mostly with rock structures, but he was also teaching a little bit more about tread. And one thing he brought up is, if you do a really good job of defining the inner edge of the trail, so the angle between the slope that comes down and then the flat tread, that people then feel more comfortable walking right next to that angle. And so they walk further away from the edge, and the trail lasts longer, almost for something that seems like a minor aesthetic detail, but it actually helps make your trail more maintainable.
Yeah, and I think just how specific that can get and all these little details is really, really interesting. We are going to take a short break here. You are tuned to KBBI, and you're listening to The Coffee Table, and my guests in the studio are former park ranger Roger McCampbell and regular park volunteer Kathy Sarnes and Ground Truth Trekking Executive Director Brentwood Higman. We will be back in just a few minutes.